Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of dark energy. Greetings once again from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. If you glanced at the online announcement regarding tonight's program, you might be wondering whether I've decided to morph into Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil or maybe Dr. Doolittle, because we're going to be talking about autism. And before you give up on that or tune out, let me say a couple of things. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, no one ever heard about autism. It was never mentioned. I never knew anyone who had it or any family that was affected by it. But there has been an explosion in the number of autism cases in this country and to some extent around the world, to the point where now one in every 110 American children born will have autism in one form or another. And that is an astonishing number. That is a public health issue, if not a public health crisis, by any definition of the terms. But unless you have someone with autism in your own family or a neighbor or someone close to you, chances are you've never given it a second thought. Obviously, we don't normally deal with public health issues on this program, not in a straightforward public affairs type debate or discussion. Those of you who have already written into me to gripe about the subject matter, might I suggest you take a deep breath and just listen for a minute or two, because while we will be talking about autism tonight, it will, as always, be through the coast-to-coast prism, which means things will get a little bit weird. I read three different books by our guest to prepare for the show. I had never had much interest whatsoever in autism, as I mentioned before, but I was hooked pretty much immediately, and I think a lot of you will have the same reaction once we get into this. As you'll learn tonight, there is a heck of a lot we don't know about autism, such as what causes it, how to cure it, or if it can be cured, the best way to cope with, care for, assimilate those who have it. Here's what else we don't know for sure. Are autistics blessed with abilities that the rest of us don't have? Are they more perceptive to their surroundings because of their condition, more in tune with the world around them, including the unseen world? Can they communicate through something like ESP, not only with people in their families or loved ones, but with animals and with other unidentified beings? A lot of the evidence is circumstantial and anecdotal, but there's quite a bit of it. So tonight, a look at autism and the paranormal, the supernatural, the unknown. During the first 2 hours, I'll be joined by author and autism consultant William Stillman, who has been dubbed the Autism Whisperer because of his ability to understand, to communicate with autistic kids and autistic adults. He thinks there is a distinct spiritual connection of some sort to autistics, and that autistics are somehow able to tap into things that we don't see or understand. Call them angels or demons or aliens, whatever. William Stillman will be here in a couple of minutes to share some remarkable stories of real-life autism encounters with the unknown. And then in hours 3 and 4, Laura Hirsch will be my guest. She's the mother of an autistic child and has been looking for answers, as so many parents have. And it led her to a spiritual medium, a channeler, who told her a number of things that she could not have known on her own, but which have turned out to be true. In particular, told her things about the root causes of autism. And I can tell you that I don't think the public is going to be happy about what she's found if it can be confirmed. Laura Hirsch will be here as well, and I'll make sure you get a chance to her ask questions of both of these guests. A couple of news items I want to mention. From Washington, CNN is reporting that Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, the longest serving member of Congress in American history, has been hospitalized in serious condition, according to his office. Byrd was admitted to a Washington area hospital, and doctors are now saying he is seriously ill. He's 92 years old. Also in the hospital this weekend, former Vice President Dick Cheney, who of course has a history of heart problems, he was admitted a couple of days ago, but is resting, according to his doctors. What? The guy's had 5 heart attacks? He might be indestructible. I don't know. Just what the Gulf of Mexico needs, Tropical Storm Alex is expected to pick up a lot of power tomorrow. Everyone's watching Alex closely, because if that storm heads toward the site of the BP oil gusher, it is likely the entire oil cleanup and relief effort will have to be shut down, and it'll take 2 weeks for them to get things back up in operation, meaning there will be no cap on the ocean leak for all that time. Already right now, about 60,000 barrels a day, 2.5 million gallons per day is flowing out of that broken pipe on the ocean floor. Also, CNN reports Mississippi officials reported oily tar balls washing up on their shores for the first time today. That's in four different places in Mississippi. On our Coast to Coast website, our webmaster tonight, Tim Banal, and I have put together a number of stories that may be of interest to you, including an interactive map of the Gulf area compiled by CNN, where you can click on the icon and get an update for any particular area on the map or any particular story. Handy to have if you are following this depressing disaster closely, as so many of you are. Also there on the site, some other items of interest that might give you a chuckle or two. We could all use that right about now. Excuse me. There is one article there about astronaut Buzz Aldrin, who the guy seems to be everywhere these days, doesn't he? And having a damn good time, too. He gave a great interview to Vanity Fair magazine in which he admits that being the second guy to walk on the moon as opposed to the first guy isn't all that it's cracked up to be. He also makes a passing reference to UFOs in that interview, and we posted it. We're also coming up on the 30th anniversary of one of the most famous UFO cases of all time, this one from the off the coast of New Zealand. The event was filmed by a news crew, and that footage has been analyzed ad nauseum many times over the years. It sort of stood the test of time. It's an unexplained case. I've got an updated version of the story that you can view. Also there, a featured story compiled by Tim about the United Nations meeting to discuss UFOs back in the late 70s. A lot of people don't realize the UN did take a serious look at it, at least for a while. And I found an odd list of radioactive products, consumer products, such as radioactive toothpaste that companies back in the day tried to cram down our throats years before we knew about the true dangers of radiation. Good for an uncomfortable chuckle or two. And a pretty cool scientific article about the music that our sun makes. And you can actually listen to a short clip of that on the website. One other note, another big anniversary coming up in New Mexico, July 1st through the 4th. This coming week is the time for the annual Roswell UFO Festival. Our friend of the program, Peter Robbins, who's been here a number of times, asked us to mention it. All the events are free of charge to the public. Pretty good lineup of speakers and other festivities. If you have not yet made any plans for the 4th, you could spend it in a lot worse place than Roswell, which is a pretty little town. And Tim is putting some links on the C2C website if you want more information. And then one final note, an update from Janice Sharp. You remember her? We had her on the program earlier this year. She is the mother of Gary McKinnon. He's the British hacker who broke into American government computers looking for documentation about UFOs and aliens. The U.S., of course, has been trying for years to extradite Gary to the States, slap him in prison maybe for as long as 70 years by some estimates. The new British government, which appeared to be wavering on its promise to try Gary in Britain, is now telling Janice Sharp, as of this evening anyway, that they intend to stick to their guns, try him over there, presumably with much less severe punishment. Gary McKinnon, by the way, has a form of autism, which, of course, is the main focus of our discussion tonight. Let's take our first break, come back to hear from the autism whisperer, William Stillman, about the story he's collected over the years, many of them inspirational, and some that are flat-out chilling. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. As I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, William Stillman has been dubbed the autism whisperer. He's written three books on the topic, the latest one being the Autism Prophecies, How an Evolution of Healers and Intuitives is Influencing Our Spiritual Future. It's fascinating stuff, and for his work, like so many people who appear on Coast to Coast, Mr. Stillman has been bashed by a host of critics. Mr. Stillman, do I call you Bill or William?
William's great, George, and thank you so much for having me on your program this evening.
Glad to have you here. I read two of your books today and was just fascinated by them, and I noticed in one of them that you sort of cross paths with a couple of the guys that have been critics of pretty much everything that appears on this program, the amazing Randy, those kinds of names are tossed about by families of people who are mad at you for one reason or another. And you do seem to create a lot of animosity.
You know, it's interesting. When I wrote the first book in this trilogy, and I've actually written many other books about autism for parents, but when I ventured into this arena of connecting autism with spiritual aspects, I really held my breath because I was cracking open a closet door that had previously been nailed shut, and this was the sort of thing that people whispered about with me privately. And I was really expecting to receive some harsh criticism and backlash. But to be honest with you, I think I could count on one hand the numbers of dissenters that have taken issue or exception with what it is that I've written. So I've been quite pleased and receive email every day from people all over the world who are contacting me to say thank you for telling the truth and to tell me how they have altered their perceptions of their own children or their students for what it is that I've shared with them through my writings.
Well, you write about, I read about a lot of those letters, and we'll get to some of those examples in a minute. But, you know, it amazed me that you have developed personal relationships with so many of these autistics all over the country, all over the world, and with their families. And I guess that's where the nickname comes from, the Autism Whisperer. Is that that ability to connect with folks on that level because of your own form of the disease or the condition?
Well, I want to be clear that autism is not a disease.
Okay.
And I think, George, what might be helpful for our listeners this evening would be if we could pull back just a moment and define autism for folks who may be unfamiliar with what it is.
Okay.
Or to communicate the experience of autism in a way that the average person might be able to relate to. I do have Asperger's syndrome, which is a milder cousin to autism. And so while I'm not clinically autistic, I have a lot in common with my autistic brothers and sisters, and I do use that sensitivity. Autism is not a disease because it is not degenerative. It is not something that worsens over time. It is not something that anyone is at risk of catching or acquiring. It is a neurological difference in how the brain communicates with the body, and it creates neurological blips, misfires, and disconnects.
Tell me this, can I call it a condition? Because I said disease or condition, and I wasn't sure what term to use. Is condition okay?
You can use the word condition. I use the word experience.
Okay. Well, that's sort of the goes to the heart of what you've been bashed for, is that your approach to it, which has been so helpful to so many people, has also been viewed as just sort of giving false hope, maybe, by others. And it starts out with one of the first chapters in your second book, The Soul of Autism. And the title of this little section is The World Needs Autism. Mm-hmm. Basically, you're asking a question, could this be a blessing because of how it affects and what it teaches the rest of it? Explain that.
Right. Well, I would like to go back and explain what autism is first.
Okay.
If I may, so that people have a point of reference. If you've ever awakened in the middle of the night and you realize that your arm is dead from the elbow down because of how you've slept on it and you've cut off the circulation, in that moment, your brain automatically starts sending messages to that deadened limb to budge, and it's not moving of its own accord. And sometimes you're half asleep and you're trying to drag it open, or you use the other hand to open up that arm, get the circulation flowing again so that you can regain use and it becomes accessible to you once again. If that same nighttime paralysis arbitrarily shifted to any number of your limbs or lodged itself in your voice box and precluded you from articulating spoken language, this is analogous to the experience that my brothers and sisters with classic autism describe their way of being. We're talking about people who are, as a general rule, inherently gentle and exquisitely sensitive, painfully, acutely, exquisitely sensitive. Other common neurological blips, misfires, and disconnects that many of us have experienced, and if you did them frequently enough, you might be diagnosed autistic, is in the time that you're sitting there shaking your leg, tapping a pen, playing with a piece of jewelry, twirling your hair, the times when there's a song that's looping through your head over and over again and it's precluding you from concentrating or moving forward, the times when you're driving and you hear a song come on the radio and you haven't heard it since high school and it immediately conjures up memories that you link to a certain era in your life, there's a strong associative component there. The times that you are doing something in one environment with the intention of going to another environment, and you get to the second environment and you completely forget what it was you were going to do and you have to backtrack to the first environment, and then you remember, or the times that you completely lose track of time for being immersed in something for which you feel absolutely passionate, and you don't have to use the bathroom, you don't have to eat, and people might say you're in your own little world. Those are all some very common neurological blips, misfires, and disconnects that in someone with autism may seem greatly exaggerated. However, number one golden rule of autism, I'm going to be very firm and adamant about this because I think folks have lots of misconceptions about what autism is and isn't. Number one golden rule of autism is presume intellect. What that means is that we value and we believe and we demonstrate respect and reverence in all of our interactions, and we interact with someone with autism.
Hey, William, I'm going to interrupt you here, and I don't mean to be impolite to a guest, but I've asked you now four questions and you haven't answered any of them, and I appreciate that you want to get some of this stuff out, but if you'll let me conduct the interview, I think this will go a lot better, rather than you just giving us a lecture on autism, because sort of one of the appeals of this topic was that you've sort of looked at this from a different perspective. But this is not a clinical or a public health program. I'd really like to ask you some questions and have you answer them, and then we'll try to, I promise you, we'll try to cover all the stuff that you want to cover, okay? If you don't want to do that, we'll do something else. I'm just asking if you'd like to have an interview here and a discussion, or you just want to lecture to me.
I'm not lecturing. I'm trying to set a tone because I know that we've got lots of parents listening who are going to really appreciate and value this perspective. But I think it's really important before we jump into talking about some areas that might be really challenging for some people to understand that we talk about people with autism are very sensitive and very intelligent beings. And I think that understanding that sensitivity is going to lead to where it is that you want to go, George.
Well, for example, I ask you, you start with a chapter that talks about the world needs autism, and you have the premise of, is it a blessing or not? And that should be an opportunity for you to tell us your thoughts on this. So I'm just asking you, if I'm going to ask questions, I'm hoping that you're maybe going to answer them when I ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair deal?
Right. Again, I'm trying to be helpful in setting a tone for folks that may be completely unfamiliar with autism, may not have a point of reference. So I'm trying to make it relatable to those folks in ways that they might understand.
Well, you got 2 minutes to do that, to sort of give us the overview of the autism that you want to do, because that's when we're going to a break. And then I'd like to conduct an interview, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
Okay. What else would you like to say?
Okay. Well, I think I've about said it. We're talking about people who are in bodies that are not accessible to them. One of my friends with autism talks about his experience as being a whole soul in a broken body. In other words, we're talking about folks who are in there, who are completely competent, and we need to interact and relate with them in the same manner that we might someone recovering from a stroke, someone with Parkinson's, someone with cerebral palsy. All right. We're also talking about folks who are, as I said, inherently gentle and exquisitely sensitive as it relates to all of the senses and emotions. The person with autism typically has a magnification of all of those senses times 1,000, supersonic senses that predisposes many of us to being able to perceive all things seen and unseen, which is where you want to go. So I think once we have an understanding of that, then we can begin to discuss some of these other topics that might be a little challenging for some people to understand as it relates to folks about whom there's lots of myths and stereotypes.
Understood. But I think you will find that the audience here at Coast is very receptive to what you're going to be telling them tonight.
Terrific. I'm looking
really
forward
do.
to it.
And when you say about acutely sensitive, meaning is there a percentage? I mean, you've met and interviewed so many thousands of people over the years. I'll tell you what, we'll take our break. We'll come back to that. I'd be interested to know how many of the autistics that you've dealt with that you would classify after interacting with them truly are acutely sensitive with their presumed intelligence. Stay with us. We're talking with William Stillman about the autism prophecies here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with William Stillman, author of three books, including The Autism Prophecies, about his research with autistics, including some amazing stories that he's accumulated about some of them who seemingly are capable of communicating through ESP, not only with other people, but with animals. We'll get into that and a lot more when we come back here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're talking with William Stillman, who says that autism is an experience, not a disease, certainly, not really even a condition, but an experience. And he was telling us before the break about communicating with autistics, finding out that so many of them are acutely sensitive, and suggesting that we should presume going into any interaction with them that there is intelligence there. William, what percentage of those you've worked with end up confirming that? The presumption of intelligence.
Confirming their intelligence or confirming their sensitivities?
The intelligence.
Every single one.
Really?
Absolutely every single individual. And George, I appreciate the forum, and I know that I wasn't following where you were leading, but I really felt I needed to set a tone. There's lots of misperceptions that autism equals mental retardation.
I agree with you, and we're good. We're all good.
It's a myth and fallacy. Now, one of the commonalities in those of us on the autism spectrum, again, are those acute and painful sensory sensitivities, a magnification of all of the senses times 1,000 through an autism prism of sensitivity. I am constantly surprised that other people don't see and hear the same things that I do. I'm like a sponge or a magnet all day long, constantly absorbing everything that most people or the average person filters out naturally and doesn't think twice about. So every time someone sneezes, every radio that I hear blaring in the distance, every car that backfires, every baby that cries, all the visuals that I might see out in the community, I'm absorbing all of that stuff, and it's exhausting to endure. And this is one of the things that people don't understand, that sensitivity of not being able to wean away all of the external stimuli that can really be assaultive and painful. The flip side of that is that sensitivity can predispose us to perceiving things seen and unseen. And that's where the spiritual piece comes into play. Remember, too, we're talking about folks. I gave the example of the arm that fell asleep in the middle of the night. And what happened if that nighttime paralysis should shift to any number of your limbs? Because a lot of folks with autism are disconnected from their bodies. Or lodge in your voice box. About half of all people with autism don't speak. When you live in silence, it's a perpetual state of meditation. And if you're presuming intellect in the manner that I was talking about before the break, then that experience of living in silence and the perpetual meditation should be no different than that of others who deliberately enter into similar states of solitude in order to attain a spiritual plateau of enlightenment. I'm talking about the nun, the monk, the yogi, the priest, and the guru. They deliberately enter into states of solitude for, in part, the benefits of the spiritual fruits that it bears. Greater
the quiet mind, right? The
Pardon
quiet
me?
Mind. The quiet mind.
The quiet mind. Absolutely. Well, we've got people with autism born into it. They haven't made the choice deliberately in this lifetime. They're born into it. So they're living it naturally. That predisposes one naturally to attain or achieve similar spiritual gifts in the same manner that we revere those persons whom we've elevated to religious or high spiritual standards. Those fruits come forth in, you were talking about ESP, telepathy, yes. And most of us practice telepathy every day. It's what we call prayer. What people need to know about some, not all, people with autism, like myself, we think in pictures and movies, constant streams of visual imagery. I'm enjoying my time with you and in communicating this information with your listeners, but there's a projector rolling film of everything that I'm talking about with you, and I'm seeing images that correspond with our dialogue this evening.
Huh.
That sounds like hard work.
Yeah.
It's not. It's natural, it's fluent, and it's fluid for me. It's work for you because you don't think that way, unless I direct you to, if I were to say, picture this or imagine that, then you can do it. Well, what we know from Temple Grandin, who's probably the most famous and well-known person with autism, and her specialty is working with animals, is that animals think in images. And so wouldn't it make sense, and they live in silence too, wouldn't it make sense that people who live in silence, such as individuals with autism, could swap imagery with some animals? And these are some of the anecdotes that I've gathered.
Can we talk about ESP or telepathy examples of autistics who either communicate with you through something like that or other loved ones, people to start with, then we'll move to animals?
Certainly.
Examples?
Examples. Mm-hmm. A lot of the experiences that I've collected have to do with, again, people who have been completely misunderstood and misinterpreted. And the telepathy sometimes comes through in, one example was, I was with a family and the mother was telling me how the little fella in their family with autism always knew what was going to be on the school lunch menu before it was published. So it's little stuff like that. But it also can come forth in ways that are much more profound and in some ways premonitory. And this is where things get misinterpreted. I've collected more than a few examples of young people with autism who are throwing what gets interpreted as a tantrum while out driving with their family in a car. And it gets to such a point that the family has to pull to the side of the road until that child is able to tame and refine his or her experience in the moment. And then once everybody's composed, they get back on the road again, only to discover that down the road a mile or two, there was a really bad multi-car accident that the family would have been involved in had they not pulled to the side of the road.
Hmm. And a premonition of bad stuff, in addition to that, I mean, the long-term down the road?
One of the examples in the first book that I gave of called Autism and the God Connection, there was a young fella who, in the weeks prior to September 11th, 2001, kept drawing a series of clocks, and the clocks were all set to 9/11. Now, how would we interpret that or know that it had relevance to September 11th, 2001? I don't know. He was also drawing images of a fireball in the sky over a wooded area and buildings on fire and so forth. And I think that, again, when we don't presume intellect in individuals with autism, we can overlook or dismiss a lot of things when we should be paying more attention to the signs and signals and communications that are coming through in ways other than verbal, because verbal doesn't work for everybody.
You talk about animal examples where autistics seem to have a real connection with animals. Can you provide some examples of that? And I know in one of the books, I don't remember if it's the Autism Prophecies in particular, you single out dolphins and mention how, you know, dolphins are intelligent. They've been on Earth a lot longer than humans. They've been intelligent on Earth a lot longer than humans. And the presumption could be if that they have these abilities as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that all animals do. And I think that every human being does also. I just think that in persons on the autism spectrum who are inherently gentle and exquisitely sensitive, they may be more apt to tap that aspect of their personality in ways that are more ready than the average person. Where the dolphins are concerned, there is a woman that I know who actually has a dolphin sanctuary, and she invites families of people with autism to come and swim with the dolphins. And she gave me a gorgeous story that I'd like to share with our listeners this evening.
Sure.
About a little fellow who really didn't speak for having that neurological blip, misfire, and disconnect that I spoke of earlier. And he was just so elated and so invigorated in swimming with the dolphins and looked so forward to doing this. And one of the trainers was in the water with him, and this fella just had such a glow about him and such an exuberance. And the trainer said to him, what did the dolphin say to you? And he spoke, and he blurted out the word love. And this is typical of what I'm hearing about interactions that people with autism are having with animals.
Tell me this, you know, and some of the things I've read online, some of the grief that you get, and it's not much, I'll admit that, but parents who can't accept your, at least it's a rosier view of autism than maybe some of them have. They, you know, they deal with the autistic kids or something. They deal with it every day, the trials and tribulations, and it obviously can be a handful a lot of times and has quite an impact on a family's life. But a lot of those folks who think that you're being way too optimistic, way too rosy in painting this picture that it's not really, it's not a condition, it's more of a blessing. What do you say to those folks when that issue comes up?
There was a mother in an audience once who stood up and said, how can there be a God that would cause my son to suffer so? And I said, it's not God that's causing your son to suffer. It's the ignorance and the insensitivity and the intolerance of everyone around your son. And George, I wish to be clear that as we speak, there are children in this country with autism that are being hit and kicked and beaten and bitten and strapped to chairs and mouths duct taped shut and locked in closets in our schools. And this is really about developing a cultural competency. I'm all about promoting relationships. I'm here to support people to decode hieroglyphics. When you're trapped in that body where there's that nighttime paralysis I talked about earlier, you're intelligent inside, you're in a Twilight Zone version of charades all day, every day, trying to communicate your most basic of wants and needs. And if we buy into a culture of fear that perpetuates myths and stereotypes, then I can appreciate where parents are coming from when they feel disconnected in the relationship. So I get that piece. And my books are not for everyone. They're not. And I understand that people are grieving, and they might be grieving the loss of a child they envisioned they were going to have. But I think it's unhealthy to continue in that mindset indefinitely. And I think that at some point we really do need to pull back and start looking at the glasses half full.
Well, I thought it was the most moving part of the two books of yours that I read is the idea of just looking at it in a different way, that the world needs autism. That was the phrase that I mentioned earlier in our discussion, that it needs it. Your suggestion is because of how it benefits the world, setting an example in essence. Go ahead and tell us about that a little bit.
My focus is not what causes autism, and I'll leave that to the researchers and the scientists and other guests. My focus is not what causes autism, but rather what autism causes. And what it causes, George, is what I hear consistently from parents all over the world who are contacting me to say, I'm a better person than I was prior to parenting this child. I'm a more patient person. I've developed a sensitivity that I didn't realize I had. One person told me, autism made me finally grow up. There's what I call a Messiah complex that I see all around me, you know, because I'm like an anthropologist. I do a lot of very careful observing of human behavior. And quite frankly, I'm appalled well, by what I see. I see rudeness on the rise. And I don't think of autism as a plague or a scourge or an epidemic. I see it as an opportunity to lend balance to the world and to refocus our attention away from the false idols that we have gotten so caught up in worshiping wealth and physical beauty and power and material possessions and manipulating people. People with autism could care less about all that stuff. And for parenting the individual with autism, I've got parents telling me, I am transformed. And that's what I'm looking for, the transformation in the relationship. George, I got to tell you and your listeners, as a consultant, 90% of what I do has absolutely nothing to do with the individual with autism.
It's the family.
Has everything to do with my aspiring to be that agent of change in shifting the perception, in helping people to see this is an opportunity.
One of the other points you make, I think, in the new book, The Autism Prophecies, is about the possibility of a prenatal test that would give parents the option of learning early on if their child is likely to be autistic and then aborting it.
And, well, that creates a real ethical debate.
Yeah.
And we're not there yet in terms of autism. There's not a test like that yet for autism. It may be coming, but there is most definitely a test like that for fetuses with Down syndrome. And the majority of people elect to abort that fetus. And so, is the world less rich for not having people with different and unique ways of being in it who, can be terrific teachers and mentors and to create that shift in personas and to support people to be more sensitive and compassionate?
You know, what you don't hear about are autistic adults. You hear about autistic kids and the trouble they cause and what a handful they are for their parents, but you don't hear about autistic adults. And I know your condition is, your own experience is very mild, but what happens to autistic adults?
I meet a lot of them that are not officially diagnosed, and they're the parents of the children for whom I'm consulting.
Really?
Usually a father, because autism is 4 to 5 times more prevalent in males than in females. But I've been in this field, in addition to living it, I've been in this field for over 23 years now. And when I started out, autism was considered extremely rare. And I worked in supporting people that had the label of mental retardation only, but in hindsight, were clearly autistic. So I think we're getting better at recognizing the traits and symptoms and making the diagnosis. What ends up happening typically is that we've got folks who then have to transition into group homes or family living arrangements where a non-relation family agrees to take someone into their home. 50, 60 years ago, parents were told to institutionalize their children and forget about them and get on with their lives.
Any indication that autistics are communicating with each other, not only with the members of their parent, their family, or with you, but there is some other kind of level of communication?
Oh, sure. Oh, you bet. Remember, we're talking about folks who about half the time don't speak because they're not wired for speech. So that nighttime paralysis is lodged in their voice box. They can't produce language, but they're in there. As I said, we're talking about folks who are competent and we presume in their intellect. So you've got people in the same room together, and I've been in these situations, who don't speak or who have limited verbal capacity. And I'm conducting a meeting with these folks, and they start giggling and carrying on together. And there's stuff that they're shooting back and forth across the room to each other as little sidebars that have nothing to do with my agenda. We sort of have to pause and say, okay, folks, what's going on? And if they're communicating through other means, such as using a keyboard to type, they'll let me in on the joke.
You have examples in your books about autistics communicating. They're using a keyboard, communicating to a parent or family member, and the family member is communicating back, but not using anything, right? There is some sort of a there that the autistic is basically reading the mind of the family member.
Right. In fact, and I think that he's listening, my dear friend Wally, who contributed an entire chapter to the Autism Prophecies, is a fellow not only with autism, but with Lou Gehrig's. And he communicates through some typing, and he also has an infrared device that he points at a keyboard to communicate. And he sent me a gorgeous letter this evening about how that stuff works and how he is picking up on people's thoughts for living in silence and being so sensitive.
Well, maybe we can pick up on that when we come back after the break. And I do want to get into this absolutely fascinating survey you did of autistics all over the world, asking them about prophecies and visions and their earliest memories. It's some stunning results. We'll get into that when we come back with our discussion of with William Stillman, The Soul of Autism, and also the Autism Prophecies here on Coast to Coast AM.